Today on Job Talk, learn how one man turned a humble hardware store into a retail shopping experience. It's all about customizing products and services to your customers. Find out how he did it and more on Job Talk.
Hi, welcome to Job Talk. My name is Dave Forrest.
And I'm Doug Minard.
Each week, we have the opportunity to speak with people of various careers and interesting lifestyles. Today, it's no different.
Today, we're talking with Michael Catcott, who had a really successful career in America's theme park business. You know, he's something of a creative genius when it comes to retail, understanding the metrics of space in a store and dollars per square foot and how to calculate overhead and how to keep your inventory right. But the fascinating thing about Michael is that he runs what today is sort of a modern version of the old country store. That's underselling it just a bit, but his store sits in a place in San Antonio, Texas that's got its own cultural dynamics in a very beautiful older neighborhood, and we're anxious to learn some things today, Michael. How are you doing, by the way?
I'm doing great.
Great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
First of all, the whole idea of starting a business and running it, and we're also fascinated by, I'm sure you continue to be fascinated by, some of the folks who come to your store and the things that they're looking for and how you fill that space in this cool neighborhood you live in.
Yeah, well, it has been an interesting 3 years. It's always was a dream to have my own retail business, small business. And 3 years ago, I purchased a neighborhood hardware store that I had shopped at when I lived in San Antonio for years. And it was about ready to close. It was 73 years old and kind of a neighborhood icon, just like a lot of neighborhoods had that old fashioned hardware store. I took the challenge on and we have turned it around, but it has, like you said, it's been very interesting dynamic. Our front door faces multi-million dollar home neighborhood. Our side door faces the historic district with all its rules, regulations, and restrictions. And our back door faces middle-class America and even Section 8 housing. So we get a whole dynamic of people coming in to the store. But the one common denominator that everyone wants is they want the personal customer service. They walk in the door and they first thing they say is, please don't send me to that big box. Please help me solve my toilet problem, or I need to paint. What should I use, oil or latex, et cetera? So that was a fast, quick lesson learned after being in corporate America and not really being face-to-face individually with the customer, but in a small store being face-to-face with them.
It strikes me that the architecture of the neighborhood must drive an awful lot of the requests for specific items because some of the houses are older. Is that correct?
Yeah, and they're required to follow replacing windows in the front the exact same way. So there's a lot of pieces, parts that we carry that they can't find at the big boxes because they're not in, suburban homes and stuff like that, and they're set up mainstream. Some of those parts are getting harder and harder to find because those manufacturers, since the big boxes aren't buying from them, they're not producing and turning that product around. So our main source is through True Value, but I start sourcing elsewhere in order to keep that product going because that's the mainstay. Without a simple little window lever that they need to match all their existing old windows, that stops them from coming into the store.
Yeah, I've had a chance to visit Michael's store, and like we said, it's an old hardware store. And I can tell you, in all honesty, the first time I walked in, it harkened me back to being a youngster growing up in Whippany, New Jersey, where we had a neighborhood hardware store. When you talk about old nails and screws that were in free boxes, not prepackaged, but here they are freestanding, and take them out of the bin and weigh them and all that kind of good stuff. So having said that, and I know you're in a unique part of town, an older part of town there in San Antonio, what have been some of the unusual requests that you didn't anticipate going into this business? And I'm not talking about someone wanting a left ear for an elephant, but I'm just saying something like, wow, I hadn't thought about that aspect of this retail business.
Yeah. What surprises me is the amount of people that come in with their pieces, parts that are broken that they want to have us fix. Everything from a piece of luggage that the wheel came out. And it's so battered that, the majority of America would replace it. Our society is a disposable society. Let's pay the cheap price and then, use it for a couple of years and then just replace it. And we'll hear the stories. Well, this was a ceramic pot that I bought when I was in France with my wife, 30 years ago and stuff, and they want it fixed. Or they'll bring in a piece of lumber and they don't have a saw or a drill. Can you cut this down to this size? I did not know that that store had done that before, and we are actually doing it at a greater level than what it used to do. I talked to the previous owner and stuff, and they would do some of it, but not. That's the thing that has really helped turn the store around is all of a sudden the neighborhood realizes, oh, there is the handyman still exists. You know, you used to go to the vacuum cleaner shop and have your vacuum closed. That place is closed. The lawnmower repair place is closed. They don't get enough business and the rent's too high for them and stuff. And so we've all of a sudden turned into a repair shop. And that I did not think about and plan for.
Where do you find people who have the handyman skills to fix the vacuum, the lawnmower, cut the wood? Or am I talking to them?
you're talking to them.
Half of it you're talking to is, I call it my second job career. While I was in corporate America, I flipped 6 homes and remodeled and did everything myself from tile to sheetrocking and stuff. So the hardware store is natural. I lived in the hardware stores and did that. But you know, I have several good staff members. But the interesting part about all of this is that aspect of the service and wanting to fix something. And if you don't know how, and there's a lot of things that people have brought in that I'm like, not exactly really sure, but today's modern technology solves it. YouTube has it. Somebody has done it. I was repairing a lamp that had a 3-way switch on it. There was just something about the wiring. It was really, really old. And I couldn't get it to work and get the right bulb to turn on at the right time and stuff like that. And I literally Googled YouTube, and that exact same circuitry setup, somebody was doing a repair on step by step, and boom, that's how I got it repaired.
That's
great. So, you know, somebody comes in with something, we're like, okay, somebody has probably solved this and it's on YouTube, you know, and then boom, that's part of our repertoire.
Well, let me ask you another question, because we talk to lots of people in our old business, the park business, and a fair number of people in retail. And one of the common things we get from lots of people is this whole idea that if retail is going to survive, it has to become an experience, you know, something beyond just a place to pick something off a shelf. And I think what Dave is alluding to, I felt the same way when I went to your store. What a great experience. You've walked into a place, you know, that harkens back to a different time. It's very carefully laid out. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things you do to make it more of, you know, an experience, sort of an immersive shopping venture instead of, you know, just picking something off the shelf?
Yeah, and that was one of my big strategic plans when I was purchasing the store. Is the objective was, this has got to be a store that after you went to Sunday brunch with your family or your friends were visiting or something like that, you said, hey, we have got to go to Schnabel's and you're going to check out this store. And we all know that. We all have a store like that or a restaurant like that, that in our neighborhood that when our friends and family visits us, that we want to take them to and stuff. And that was an objective, is to turn the store into that. And we are well on our way to that. Some of the things is the design of it. It's an old store that used to be a garage that part of the ceiling isn't, the rafters and insulation is still exposed. And there's a lot of people say, you need to cover that up. Now, that's the ambience of the store. It's full of antiques. Mm-hmm. Instead of all pegboards and shelves, the standard shelves you see everywhere, we hand make our shelves and stain them and use galvanized, you know, metal and things like that so that the fixturing looks neat. We have a glass top table right now that's sitting on a galvanized trash burner, which is like a trash can with holes in it, and then it's filled with light so it lights up and, you know, and people come in and see that. So part of it is the whole Pinterest life. You know, what people see on Pinterest and ideas when you walk around the store. In the garden area, there's wood planks that have mason jars that are screwed on with the C-clamps that people use to attach their hoses. And they're like, oh, wow, I could do that on my fence. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of that type of stuff. Even if a product sells really well, we usually don't repeat it because we have a lot of the same customers and they want to see something different. That was the first year lesson is, I'm like, oh, this kitchen stuff did really well. Let me reorder it. And the second time it sat. And it's like, oh, it's the same customers. They have already bought it.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
You're bringing in your theme park experience and you want to have repeat visitation and you realize you have to change your product line, whatever that case might be.
Yeah.
You're a theme park hardware store operator is what you are.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, there's two other big things about retail. One, men buy, women shop. It's just the nature of the beast. So a guy's coming in, he needs a hammer, he's going to buy a hammer. And if we can trip him up with some really cool knives or flashlights or something like that, we might get him to buy that. A woman comes in and she needs to have a key made for her house. And all of a sudden, all the handmade soaps are right there next to her, and the really cool thing, you know, kitchen towels that lead her into the section that has the hooks, the decorated hooks that lead her into the new doorknobs for her cabinets and stuff like that. And she walks out spending $40 on a $2 key that she came in for.
Yeah.
So that's retail. And whether you're a hardware store or a grill store, a woman's going in there, you have to figure out how to sell to her. We change the way we position things so that, you know, they want picture hooks. They hang pictures. So why are they buried on the bottom in the right-hand corner? They need to be front and center so that they can see that we have them and stuff. And then the other thing is, like I talked about in the beginning, is the service. And they want service and they're willing to pay for service, and not necessarily in the price of the product. We have to be very competitive in the price of our product. But screen repair, lamp repair, will you do this for us? Will you do that for us? And you can charge them the $13, $14 an hour service to do that.
Yeah.
We're now moving into do-it-yourself classes, which are free, but eventually it could turn into a revenue-generating thing where, you know, we have a do-it-yourself class on how to do this, and, you know, it's $5 to attend the class or something like that in the future. But
yeah, you have advanced classes. Today we're going to teach you how to use the hammer and the saw for free. Next week, for $5, we teach you how to make something with that hammer and saw. Yeah.
And a recent thing that we're now working on, too, and it goes to service, is think about it. You have a raccoon problem. And, you know, no one knows how much a raccoon trap comes in. They come in and they find out they're $89. And we watch it on their face. And then we see them pull their phone out and they're like, oh, that's a big box of $89, too. And they're like, oh. Well, guess what? You only need it that one or two times. So we're going to start renting raccoon traps for $12. You know, you start thinking about people come in, they want that drill, they have a project, and they just want the cheapest drill for the one time. So we're moving slowly into this rental business.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily for the contractor. It's for the home person to make that product available to them that they really don't want any more than a one-time use.
Yeah, I was sharing with Michael when I saw him a couple of weeks ago, the fact that Cheryl and I have moved to Charlotte, so we left a lot of stuff that I didn't need anymore. But there's those one-time things. Example, to change the battery in a smoke alarm. I need, you know, a 10-foot stepladder because we have a crown ceiling. Well, that'd be the only time I would need it. So
right.
I'm looking around the neighborhood to someone who might have one that I could borrow, but I'm new to the neighborhood, so I'm not going to walk up to a complete stranger. So now I'm stuck. Do I buy one for this one-time use one? That's a perfect example where Michael's is addressing it from a service standpoint. It's a one-time need, but you don't have to purchase the item to still get the advantage of using it.
You know, I'm just curious, what do you do with the raccoon after you catch it?
That's the advanced class.
Yeah, that's advanced class.
For an extra $10, we'll tell you what to do.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day is what I tell the team at the store. I'm like, you know, retail is, it's going to always be around. You have to be a destination. There's always still going to be, you know, a door to walk into, and people still want to do that. The problem is there's no margin dollars left in it anymore. As the big boxes and Amazons duke it out, they get volume and they can lower the retail. The costs are continuing going up, you know, material costs, labor costs, and everything's going up. And so where you used to make $3 on selling a $10 product, you might only be making $2. You can't pay taxes and rent and all labor on $2. And so you have to be something more. You know, a small retail business cannot necessarily grow volume to cover that loss. You can grow it some, but you're talking where you used to be able to grow 3 or 4% a year. You now have to grow 10 to 15% a year in retail volume just to cover the margin loss. So you have to be something more.
Yeah. Great words of wisdom. We're talking to Michael Catcott, who's the owner, manager, general manager, carpenter.
Yeah. Well,
the everything at Schnabel's Hardware in San Antonio, Texas. And these are great business lessons for anybody in any business at any level.
But here's the other thing I admire about Michael. The other thing he did, which I thought was one of the smartest, is that he owns the building. He didn't just buy the business. He bought the building. Right, Michael? Explain the strategy behind
that. Yes, I did. And that was part of the condition of the sale. You need to control, as a retail operator, as much as you can of your expenses. And quite frankly, the building owner, me, charges less rent than what a typical owner would charge to that retail store. But because I can control my expenses on the operation side of the building, I'm able to help make the retail side successful. And that's where you'll see a lot of small businesses, you know, they'll go up. There's always somebody that's like, that's their dream. Open up some type of retail shop, gift shop, et cetera, et cetera. And they won't last very long. And it's because rent is extremely high. Property tax goes up. It gets passed off to the renter. You separate the two in terms of business ownership and stuff, and have a contract between both of them and stuff. But I haven't raised rent in 3 years, despite the fact property taxes have went up 40%. And that's in order to keep the retail side running. Yeah.
And so what will happen at someday way down the road is Michael will sell his business but retain the building, and so he still has a revenue stream.
Yeah.
So again, that's where his experience, his business experience, comes into play with what he's doing on a daily basis operationally. Just for the purpose of scope, Michael, for those who haven't been to your store, what is the size of your store square footage and roughly, and how many employees do you have so people have an idea of how small a store we're talking about?
Yeah, it's a 6,000 square foot building with about 1,000 square foot outdoor garden space, and the retail aspect of it is about 4,000 of it, 2,000 of its storage and the workshop and stuff. And we have two full-time folks and four part-time and myself.
There you go. You talk about small business operation.
Yep. You know, that's fantastic.
It works like a charm. It's all about quality and service. Again, we want to thank Michael Catcott for spending some time with us today, the owner of Schnabel's Hardware in downtown San Antonio. Well, are you considered San Antonio or are you considered Almost Park? What is your address?
Almost Park is the actual little city, yeah, which is just a basic residential city in downtown San Antonio.
Yeah.
It's 3 square miles type thing, but yeah, we're basically San Antonio.
All right. Well, we want to thank Michael for spending time with us today, and best of luck to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
And we're overdue for a visit to come look at the trinkets in Schnabel's Hardware, yeah, and have some good conversation around the trash burner.
Yeah.
I almost said country stove,
but
can't wait. Take care, my friend.
All right.
Okay.
Bye now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for spending time with us today. We hope to hear from you next week.
Yeah, in the meantime, leave us a note on the blog and or send us a note at dave@jobtalkradio.org or doug@jobtalkradio.org.
Dave takes the good notes, Doug takes the bad notes.
I take the high road, Dave takes the low road.
It's a journey. It's a four-wheel drive journey. Hey, thanks again for being with us on jobtalkradio.org. We hope that you'll go to our website, leave a note, post a blog, send us an email. JobTalkRadio.org.
That's JobTalkRadio.org.